And now here is Deborah Carr. And I'm so glad to have you on the Martha Dean program. That comes straight from the heart.
Oh, well, I've been longing to come, you know.
Have you?
For years and years and years. I don't know how it is we've never got together before.
Well, I think I will now enter. Can you enter lawsuits belatedly? I will now sue the people who produced that great play of yours, Tea and Sympathy, because I wanted you then, and they didn't tell me you wanted to come, too.
Oh, well, you should. Well, let's sue them now.
It's Barbara Carr, K-E-R-R, and it's pronounced Carr.
That's right. When I first came here, you know, that I went through this awful publicity campaign of Deborah Carr rhymes with star. Now, that's enough to set you back 10 years, isn't it? Awful. I still get called Kerr, and in Scotland they call me Care, so I answer to anything.
Oh, you are Scott, mm-hmm. I know, and it is Care.
Care, yes.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, it's K-E-R-R, and you pronounce it Carr.
Carr, like Clark and Darby. And if anybody challenges me in America, I say, all right, if you are complaining about this, how about Arkansas? It's Arkansas to me. Why do you call it Arkansas?
And a lot of third grade people would agree with you, too. This makes little children furious when they say Arkansas and the teacher says, no, it's Arkansas.
I've got confused, to say the least.
Where in Scotland?
In Helensburgh, which is on the Clyde. And if anyone was there at any time, they will know where it is. It's actually sort of a very, well, I think it's quite a large place now, but when I was born there, of course, it was rather small. And it's near Loch Lomond, to be romantic.
Ah.
And, but it's, I think, I'm afraid it's a huge industrial town now.
Well, you were brought up in England.
Yes, I was. My parents moved to the south when I was about five. And so, and I've only been back twice since.
Did you go to school in England?
Yes, I went to school. I went to boarding school in Bristol, which is in the west of England, and it seems like I was there all my life. I don't know. Spend a life in boarding school.
Well, they finally sprung you.
Yes.
And you did a play. You did a movie.
I did
start.
A movie, yes.
Because, Deborah Carr, you've done only one play in the United States.
That's
Tea
right.
and Sympathy.
Mm-hmm.
Then you did one in England.
Yes.
Heartbreak House?
Yes, Heartbreak House, yeah.
But there have been 44 motion pictures.
Yes.
Including a new one, The Arrangement.
Yes.
Which I have not seen because it's not been released. Have you seen it?
No, I should say not. I just finished it on Friday. And they're still shooting things on it, so I haven't even seen, you know, one inch of it.
You haven't seen a little bit?
Not
or a
even
little
a little
piece?
Bit, because I don't like to go to what we call the rushes, which is the, you know, what you did yesterday you see tomorrow, you know. And I don't like to do that.
Well, I like to go to the previews, and I always do, but since there haven't been any, I'm as unprepared as you are.
Well, I hope you do go, because I don't often say I think a movie that I've been in is going to be good, but I really do think it's going to be most interesting.
Have you liked many of the 44, you personally?
Yes, I've loved, really, almost all of them. But then perhaps I'm just that way. I have to love what I'm doing, otherwise I can't do it, you know? I think I've only made a couple of movies that I really felt were not, you know, not in, didn't have any quality at all. And so that's not bad out of 44, I think.
No, it isn't. And now I wonder how many people listening are saying, I saw her in From Here to Eternity.
I hope they remember.
Because this created a big noise, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
Well, it was a different kind of role for you.
It was a different kind of role for me, and it was the sort of, well, I mean, now I suppose the beach scene seems absolutely tame compared to what we are forced to go and see now. But, you know, at the time it was a sort of a stunner. Yeah.
Oh, yes, at the time it was, as I say, a big noise.
Yes.
Now I agree with you. It would hardly be mentioned.
Yes,
so you were
I know.
On a beach with Burt Lancaster.
Yes.
This would be nothing now.
No, it isn't, except I think it's still, strangely enough, it's still a very powerful scene. I think it just was the right moment, the right connection, as it were. And even if you see it now, you are struck by it. Even though we've all got our clothes on, imagine we have clothes on. Extraordinary.
Oh, I thought that was a superb movie.
It was a good movie.
But
wasn't
then
it?
I yes. thought you were superb in the play Tea and Sympathy.
Oh, I hope you liked that. I just adored that.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
It was so right for you, wasn't it?
it really was a kind of coming together of a play, an author, and an actress, and her particular personality, and a director. And the director was Kazan, who has directed the arrangement, and it's the first time we've worked together since. And
it wasn't written for you, was
it? No,
it
wasn't, but I think many people, if you were to read it now, you'd really feel that it must have been written for me. But Bob Anderson, who wrote Tea and Sympathy, we never met until, you know, the play was in production. But it was a coming together of a part and an actress. It just, my philosophy on life, my feelings about life, everything, you know. I think that's why it was so good.
For people who didn't see it, what do you mean specifically, my philosophy of life?
Well, the...
Because we have a lot of people listening who haven't seen it,
I'm sure. Who haven't seen it, I'm sure, no. I think, oh dear, if one talks about one's self, it sounds so egotistical to say a compassion, a great compassion for the underdog, which I know that I have. I'm a tremendous champion of people who I feel are being wrongly persecuted. And that play is what it was about. At the time they said, isn't that a play about the boy who's a homosexual? It wasn't that at all. It was man's inhumanity to man, man's bigotry, man's prejudice. Just because you don't do something the way I do it, you are wrong, and I will persecute you for it, you know? And I feel very strongly that about that, and that's in a rather large nutshell what I mean.
No, you did that very well, because it's a hard question to say, and I didn't mean to say it, what is your philosophy, but since you'd related it to the play, I just thought somebody listening would say, well, what was it about?
What was it about,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it is. It's about the persecution of people who don't conform.
Do you worry about people now, today, in 1969, who are being persecuted for not conforming?
I certainly do. I think probably even more. I can perhaps sum my own philosophy up perhaps also, or put it a step further, because I think it's very hard to do it briefly. I made another movie of one of Tennessee Williams' plays called Night of the Iguana, and I played Hannah.
I remember.
The artist, you know, is taking care of her old father. And there's a wonderful line that Hannah says, which I also is how I live. And she says, "Nothing human disgusts me unless it is unkind or violent." And I think that's an absolutely wonderful line. And Laura Reynolds in Tea and Sympathy, that was her too, really. She couldn't bear unkindness and she couldn't bear violence. And I'm the same.
Deborah Carr, do some of the films that are being done that are so violent bother you?
Yes, I absolutely am appalled at gratuitous violence. We know that there are times when a certain kind of violence has a message and means something, and either puts over a point or it makes people feel or suffer or learn or something. But the movies that are made, and it just is completely gratuitous, the beatings up and beltings and shootings and stabbing, and for what? For no reason, for absolutely no reason. It doesn't teach you anything except how many ways to mug a man, you know? And there's nothing, there's just no message in it at all. Message sounds pompous. I don't mean it that way.
No, I know.
But it isn't.
No
thought. It's not illustrating something that you feel should be illustrated and people should see or be made to feel. And heavens, we see so much violence around us in the world that why add to it?
Home is Switzerland, isn't it now?
Yes, an unviolent place.
That's what made me say it,
yes.
Made me think of it.
Yes.
There's not violence in Switzerland.
No, there really isn't. It's very, very rare. Of course, it is a small country and a very protected country. They've had to, because they are surrounded by everybody. Militarily, I mean, you could walk over it in an hour, you know. But as a people, they're extremely law-abiding, and you very, very rarely hear of any kind of violence, like, you know, strangling young girls or murders, and very, very, very few. Very few.
There was a slight amount of student trouble.
Yes, oh yes.
But very...
Slight, but they've had, oh no, they've had, and thank goodness, you know, quite rightly, really. There is a revolution abroad in the young, and I think quite rightly in many ways. I'm sometimes in disagreement in the way they go about it, but... They're rebelling against old-fashioned, outdated, outmoded means of education, and they don't have any confidence in us older folk anymore. And it's time we changed.
Us older folk. Now you have three daughters.
Yes, I do.
So you know her of, you know something about the young.
Yes, I've been lectured by my oldest daughter, who's 21 years old, and a philosophy and sociology major and student. And so she really tells me where I get off, you know.
What does she think principally is wrong with you since you're a little over 30?
Little, wow. Thank you very much. It's made my day. Oh, no, I think she... when I say she lectures me, that's not true. She's a marvelous girl, but she is extremely bright. And when she talks about it all, I'm absolutely fascinated at how intelligent that generation is, how bright they are, how concerned they are with the world around them, concerned with their own outlook on life, concerned with politics, concerned with education, concerned with everything. When I was her age, I was... I wouldn't say Miss Scatterbrain, but I was certainly not nearly as aware of the world around me as she is, and her, you know, all her contemporaries. Mm-hmm. And I've had some wonderful evenings when they've all come round, you know, a handful of her friends.
She's in school in England.
Yes, she's in. She has a research job at the University of Essex in England.
Now, and then she has a sister, 17.
Yes, that's right.
Because they're the daughters of your first marriage.
That's right.
When you were married to Anthony
Bartley. Yes, that's right.
But then, now tell about your family, because that's kind of nice. After you were divorced and married Peter Vertel, the writer.
Yes.
He had a 17-year-old daughter, too.
Yes.
So well, you practically got twins.
At that time, she was a 6-year-old and a 7-year-old. And so my Francesca's also 7. And now they're both... 17 years old and look 32, you know. Terribly grown up and very chic and terribly sophisticated.
Disgusting.
Yes. No, they're all absolutely
But
adorable.
It's kind of a nice story because your daughter was between 6 and 7.
Yes.
And his daughter was between
yes,
6 and 7.
Yes, about 4 months between.
So they really became kind of twins. And you told me they're very close.
They are. They're very close. And also the Christine, my stepdaughter, she's so... I find it hard to say stepdaughter. She's my daughter, you know.
Yeah.
And she is tremendously attached to the older one, too. Just their bosom pals, which is great. And we have really a most wonderful family life together.
I know you do.
Yes.
With the three girls.
The three queens.
And you've been married about 10 years.
Yes.
And home has been Switzerland ever since?
Ever since, yes.
How did you happen to go to Switzerland?
Well, my husband went there right after the war, and he, with his sort of best friend, Erwin Shaw, another very well-known novelist, they went there to go skiing. And they both fell in love with the place and its remoteness and its charm, and they said, this is a great place to work. And... So they both built themselves little houses, and they're still there. Sort of major, you know, citizens now, practically mayors of the village themselves.
Do you spend much time each year in Switzerland?
Yes, we do. We spend really, we're always there for 6 months, all the winter months. And then we do go off to the sea with the young for a couple of months, and then we come back in August because everywhere's so crowded, and then maybe we might go off. September is so beautiful in Switzerland. The fall is so glorious. And then sometimes we do go to Spain or something in November when it's not so nice at home. But, I mean, if I'm not working, we're there all the time, except for the summer months when we go to the sea.
Now, when you're working in places like what? Hollywood.
London,
you just made the arrangement.
Yes.
Where'd you make the arrangement?
Yes,
all in Hollywood?
Yes, we had some location in New York here, but only a week. And then the rest was made in Hollywood.
And you made films in Spain and in England?
I haven't. I've never made a film in Spain, unfortunately. We go there a lot and have a lot of Spanish friends. I've never made a movie there. But mostly I've done mostly in England. And in France I've made some movies. So...
Does your husband, Peter Vertel, go with you when you're making films?
Yes, he does. Yes, because he can take his work with him, which is... So I'm so lucky. For instance, yes. We went to Mexico on Night of the Iguana, and we were 3 months in Puerto Vallarta, which was really marvelous, and I enjoyed it. And so we've traveled around a lot through the medium of the movies, which has been great. I've seen the world through movies. I went to Africa with King Solomon's Mines and Rome for Quo Vadis, and, you know, Hawaii and Honolulu was From Here to Eternity, and then I made a film this summer called The Gypsy Moths, which took me to Wichita, Kansas, which I'd never been to the Middle West, which I adored. I mean, it's marvelous. You know, we travel between New York and Los Angeles, and you seldom see anything else. And the only other time I did see America was when I toured with the play of Tea and Sympathy, and then I saw a great deal of America.
Now, are you a citizen of Switzerland?
No, I'm a resident. I'm still British, but I'm a Swiss resident.
Oh, you couldn't vote there anyway.
No. Women don't vote. Only in one canton, as it's called, I think, there is one canton where the women can vote. But otherwise, in the rest of Switzerland, women don't have the vote. And strange enough, they don't want it. They say it's a man's world. Men, they've made enough mess of it. We don't want to make any more. They really don't want
they
to.
They really
vote.
Don't want
no.
to?
Oh, there's every so often, there's big campaigns, because there are other kind of much more enlightened, progressive women who want the vote for Switzerland, but the average Swiss woman really doesn't. They're very, very, the man is the master in the home, and they are their wife and the mother and the cook and everything else, and they say that's a man's business.
You do the voting and I have the babies.
Exactly, yes. Oh, I'm sure eventually it'll come round to it. They will get the vote.
Deborah Carr, there are some other things I want to ask you about women you've lived with and talked to all over the world. Now, the woman in The Arrangement,
mm-hmm.
I assume you're the leading lady,
the wife,
the star.
Yes.
The wife. What kind of woman is she?
Well, she's... I think she's every wife. Kirk Douglas is the husband, and Faye Dunaway is the girlfriend. And that makes it all sound terribly simple and terribly rather trite. But the woman that I play is every man's decent, marvelous, strong wife. Supported him all through his life, almost made him practically. Supported him loyally through everything. Eddie, you can do it. You can do it. You're marvelous. You're wonderful. Everything. Decent, upright, forthright, not and still very human woman. And when they are thrown over at the age of 45, 44 or 45, they can't believe it. They can't believe that not only the sort of wound to themselves, but that they really do feel they are right, and he must see it, and he must. I'll wait it out. She says, "I'll wait it out. I understand. Of course I understand. This happens, but I'll wait it out." And so that is every woman, I think, or almost every woman that mm-hmm. had some experience like that.
He'll see the light after
a while.
He'll
see the light, or he's. Everything, our whole life is built around you, Eddie, she says. And I'm sure 1,000,000,000,000 women have said it. That's why it's a wonderful part to play. But all the parts are marvelous, because it's the same. Every husband will identify with the part that Kirk Douglas plays, that he knows she's the best woman. He knows she's decent. He admires her, but he's in love with other girl, and there's nothing that's going to change it. And it's really remarkable that way. And so the girl that Faye Dunaway plays, she too, she knows, she almost, she throws him over Because she says, I know you. You'll give me all this business about marriage and all. You're not going to. I know you. And yet she loves him. And she's wrong. And she's right. And he's wrong. And he's right. And I, the wife, she's wrong. And yet she's right. We're all black and white. And it's, you know, there is no, nobody's all one thing or all the other. We're all a kind of a mixture of being decent and being really awful.
Sorry.
Isn't it true?
Yes.
And I think that's why the film is going to be very powerful, because I know it's been done in a sense before in many ways, but always rather trivially, it seems to me. And I think this really goes pretty deep. And anyhow, as you can guess, I'm tremendously enthusiastic.
Deborah Carr, it does go pretty deep if it shows shades of gray rather than all black,
yes,
or all white.
Yes.
Because nobody's like that.
Because nobody is. And you, my part, you see her, you so seldom see the long, you know, the wife is usually long-suffering and decent. And a bore. And you see her, she just gets so mad she could kill him. And right, and you say, rightly so, my God, she's right, you know?
Yeah, in the movies, she's usually portrayed as
she's
a kind of a martyr.
She's always portrayed as a martyr. Uh-huh. And this one is no martyr at all. I mean, she really gives it to him, you know? And all the characters, they're the same.
And the other woman is usually portrayed as a dreadful character.
Yes, which,
Yeah.
A tart, as they
That's
say.
Right.
Yes.
That's right.
And she isn't at all. She's marvelous, you know, decent girl, had a tough life. She's tough. Yes, she is tough. But she's had a tough life, and she's got great qualities. And he, too. And he's spent a lifetime leading a life he doesn't want to lead.
Of course, you rather, by your tone of voice, rather apologized for the plot and said it's an old one. It's trite.
But when you're talking about it, it sounds trite. It sounds like an old one, because it sounds like wife and husband and girlfriend. And I can only say that it has so many dimensions and so much embroidery and so many other things going on at all different levels that it just isn't like any other triangle story.
But Carr, wouldn't you agree that all the good ones are old ones, or all the old ones?
Yes, I know what you mean.
All the really strong themes
are the ones that are out of real life.
Of course.
Yes,
of course. You're talking about motion pictures or plays
or
novels or life.
Yeah.
This, you know, it's very trite when I say the eternal triangle, but
yes,
it's always been.
It's always been and always will be.
Whether you want to go back as far as you as recorded history and bring it on up through Backstreet with
onto
the arrangement.
Onto
but
the arrangement.
It's a very strong theme.
It is.
And one that people are not only interested in, they're involved in.
And are deeply involved in, all of them.
And whether they're involved or not, you can start an argument in any room any second, or a discussion by bringing up this
immediately
theme.
Yes, you can have a battle royal.
Just pick it out of the headlines. Name some famous man who divorced, or any famous man,
or any unfamous.
Exactly, who divorced a wife and married the other woman, or didn't marry her, but as he didn't in Backstreet,
yes,
and as he does in The Arrangement, I gather.
Yes, you don't know that they're ever married. They live together, I think. You don't know that they're ever married. You don't know at the end whether he's done the right thing or not, and that is so true of life. You really don't know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Who's to know? You do what you feel at the time.
Tell me about Peter Viertel's novels. He did White Hunter and Black Heart.
That's right, yes.
And there's a new one.
Well, it's about 4 years old now.
Oh, is it?
Yes, Love Lies Bleeding. That was about bullfighting. It was really based on the life of Luis Miguel Dominguín, who was, I suppose, one of the greatest bullfighters, you know.
Are you an authority on bullfighting?
Well, I'm. What do you call somebody who's only been around the world for 10 years of bullfighting and thinks they are an authority on it?
A minor league
a
authority.
A minor league. That's the phrase I wanted. Yes, I'm a minor league authority on skiing, surfing, bullfighting. You name it.
Do you ski much in Switzerland?
My husband does, but I don't ski very much. I did a bit about 10 years ago when the children were younger and started them off on it. Now they're all so good, it's, you know. And I don't want to break my leg anymore. My poor husband's just broken his Achilles tendon playing tennis, if you please. And having spent a lifetime hurtling himself down a mountain, it's incredible, without a scratch. And he's on a tennis court and does that. Awful. But still, he's recovering very well.
Do something about these athletic men. They're always on crutches.
I tell you, yes. He never has been. It's the first time he's ever hurt himself in any way. It's amazing.
So you're a minor league swimmer, skier?
Surfboard. That's
surfboard.
That's what we have to do in the summer. Yeah.
Are you good at that?
Great authority at that. If the wave is about 1 inch high, I'm sensational.
That's minor league authority.
That's minor league, yes.
As with the skiing, as with the bullfighting.
But I know how you should do it. I know how you should kick out and toes on the nose. I've got all the phraseology.
I suspect you're absolutely major league in the art of getting along with other people, are you?
I do know. I hope so. I like people. I like to get on with them. So maybe I am. I love American baseball is American, and American football, people are always astounded that I suppose because you're English, you're not supposed to have a feeling for those things, but I simply hate cricket and love American football.
Well, you like football, huh?
Love it, yes. Just love it. It's great. Mm-hmm. And baseball, well, when the World Series is on, I'm impossible. So, there you are. Anachronisms.
Do you write?
No. I would like to. I used to when I was much younger. But I don't know.
Couldn't you?
I wonder if I could. I've often thought about it, and then I see how hard it is when I watch my husband.
But
and
you don't mind hard work, do you?
No, I don't. I think I really have worked awfully hard all my life, but I think it's a different kind of hard work. You sit there faced by that typewriter and that empty piece of paper, and you know that.
I know.
Oh, my goodness, it's hard. And you do have to reach right down inside yourself, don't you, to
really
write well.
What's the hardest work you do now?
Cope with Christmas season, I think, in Closters. Because my work, acting to me, is an absolute joy. I rush to the studio and hide like a rabbit in a warren. And our Christmas and New Year holiday with all the girls and all their friends and all the parties and all the visiting firemen, I am absolutely exhausted by the end of January.
I think that's a wonderful answer to what's the hardest work you do. Get through Christmas.
Get through Christmas. The holiday. It's true.
The work is not, the acting, the work in motion pictures is not work.
For me, no. It's hard and the hours are terribly long, yes. But for me, it isn't. It isn't hard work. I get jolly tired, yes, physically tired. But
you have fun with that.
I have so much fun, you know. I'm so involved, and I don't find it hard at all.
Do you go into each picture that way? This is going to be fun. This enthusiasm.
Yes, I have. I would have to, otherwise, I don't think I could do it. I have great enthusiasm for what I'm doing at the time.
When did you make your first film?
Ooh, crumbs. let me see. My very, very first sort of appearance on a piece of celluloid was in 1939, and that was just before war broke out, and I had literally a walk-on in a movie nobody I don't think has ever seen since, with Conrad Veidt and Valerie Hobson. It was called Contraband, and I was the hat check girl, and it was full of spies, and I had to put the white carnation in his buttonhole, and that was a signal. Well, I think it ended on the cutting room floor, so I don't know what happened to the plot. I never did see the movie.
Where were you during the war?
In London.
Were you there all
the
time?
Yes, all the time. I worked nearly all through the war. When movies kept going on, people kept... Yes. Everybody worked. Everybody kept going. And, oh, goodness, that seems like another world, all of that.
No, no.
Yes.
You hadn't thought about that in a
while. No, I hadn't. Not in a long while, and you really think of it.
And now we're back up to The Arrangement, which is your new film.
Yes.
And it'll be released. I don't really know when it'll be released.
I don't
either. I bet they don't either.
No, they don't either, but certainly by the end of the year. I think he's going to take a long time cutting it. And
but you're finished with it.
Yes,
now.
I'm finished.
Your part is
unless
done.
There's a message at the hotel when I get back this afternoon saying come back at once.
Well, you hope not, because you hope to be here just a few days more and then go right to Switzerland.
Yes, because we're getting on a boat on Saturday, which is lovely, and going to sailing to the south of Spain, taking life easy.
That's lovely.
Yes, it will be lovely.
I just have time to thank you now for coming to the program, and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, I have too. I really have. I wish we'd done it before, but in a way I'm glad, because it's been so lovely.
Come back the next time you're here.
I will. Thank
will you.
You? Mm-hmm.
Our guest this morning has been Deborah Carr. Deborah Carr. And her new film, of which you won't see for some time, is The Arrangement.